welcome back to another episode of a multimedia live production called The Numbers Don't Lie. It's really just supporting efforts within the TESO Blackstar newsroom to bring a little more space around data journalism and what we can do with it and what sort of questions and answers we can get from that. We're sitting again with Paul Berkowitz, the director of Edges, and we've also joined by Lucanio Mnyana, the editor of Business Day. And today we're going to be talking about the IFP, especially in the Northern KZN, in the run-up to the elections. If you look at the IFP since 1994, they had, 10.5% of the electoral vote, and now in 2014 they brought it down to about 2.4%. That equates to, from 43 seats in Parliament down to 10. And also just recently in the last couple of years, they've also lost some wards to the ANC. What do these numbers mean? What can we expect coming into the 2019 general elections?
So, Scott, if you look at the trend, as you said, every national provincial election since 94, the IFP's lost a couple of percentage points. They went from 10 and then 8 and 6 and so forth. But something interesting happened in 2011. That was at the municipal elections, and it affected the 2014 national provincial elections, and that was that there was an offshoot from the IFP, and it was called the National Freedom Party, the NFP. It was started by Mangosuthu Buthelezi's second in command, a lady by the name of Zanele Kamagwaza Msibi, and she was second in command. She was, in some respect, she was the anointed successor of Buthelezi. But he decided to stay on in 2011 after the IFP continued to do badly in the 2009 national provincial elections, and she left and she formed the party, and she took a lot of support from the IFP. And what's interesting to me about the IFP in comparison to other parties that are smaller than the big three, than the ANC, DA and the EFF, if you compare the IFP to the Freedom Front Plus or to the ACDP, the other parties tend to get a little bit of support in a bigger geographical area. You know, there'll be pockets of support for the African Christian Democratic Party or the Freedom Front Plus across a majority of provinces. But the IFP support is very concentrated geographically. It's, at the moment anyway, maybe in closer to 94, it had more support in Gauteng and it had a provincial seat. But for the last couple of rounds of elections, it's been 95% of its support is in quite a small geographical area in the northern half of KZN. And so it's very interesting because there's all sorts of identity issues around culture, around language, around background. The IFP has, like many parties in South Africa that aren't big parties, there's a strong element of identity, a constructed identity, as I said, whether it's language or culture or history or geography. And the NFP pretty much took votes and support, structures, people, mayors, councillors from the IFP. And I guess the question to be asked is what happened in the 2014 national provincial elections, where the IFP declined from about 4.5, that was their national share in 2009, down to about 2.5, is that a continuation of a longer-term trend? Or had the IFP found its base and its bottom, and it was just almost like a business unusual that the NFP was formed? And what are the implications for the IFP in the upcoming elections?
I don't know, Lucani, if you can maybe jump in here. What would you suggest would be the influence of the IFP in Parliament these days?
You know, look, Paul, it's interesting what you say about the geographic sort of concentration. I didn't actually realize it was such a concentration even within KZN. I mean the IFP has always been traditionally been, I mean, you have a lot of one-party issues. The IFP has sort of been an ethnic party issue. I mean, like in the old days, Buthelezi made a whole big role about his, and about how they appropriated sort of Zulu culture and Zulu history. So it was always the concentration in that sense was not really a surprise. Yes. But what is surprised when you say to me is even within a certain part of KZN, or not even out of KZN, I would have actually thought as well they would do better like in the Transkei, in Gauteng, where maybe like where you got a Zulu community from. And Scott, I'm not sure if I've answered your question. In terms of the influence in Parliament, I mean, it's been waning, hasn't it? I mean, if you take back from, I don't know how far you go back from the first election, government of national unity, Mangosuthu Buthelezi in government. I mean, he was actually acting president at some point in an infamous episode. Yeah. But it definitely has not been such a major source anymore. I mean, I think people think of the Prince Buthelezi now as just almost like a historical curiosity. I don't think we actually turn the TV news and see what is he going to say, like as we used to in the old days.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. I mean, that's essentially what I'm asking. I mean, with the numbers that we can see, the declining trend, and also, you know, with the leader like Buthelezi, who's, you know, he's been the leader of that party for most of my life, who he's due to step down after these elections, at least that's what he's saying. Should South Africa, one, does the party survive after he steps down? Is there any real sort of political clout there from an ideological perspective or from a municipal perspective? And should South Africa really care? I mean, they've got a very good, they've a high significance in the country's history, but today, given the high localization of their support, you know, what can we expect, really?
I don't know, Paul, we might have enough since you know all the data, but I mean, it's quite interesting in terms of, they've always been a country that has, quite a bit about culture, about ethnicity. I mean, you think the country now has sort of moved on. I mean, I think Paul explains why, for example, why even smaller parties like Freedom Front Plus, even though that's also like a cultural base, but I suppose that's people across the country as opposed to people in one region, which is, like a sort of legacy of the apartheid system, I suppose. But, you know, ACDP, that's like an issue, like we have small pockets of everywhere, whereas like with the IFP, like it's hard to actually see it having a culture, a future in a sort of like multiracial, increasingly integrated society we're in now, you know.
I suppose, Paul, the question from your side, I mean, given the numbers that we're looking at, I know you don't like to make predictions because you don't like to be wrong.
That's the byline.
But I mean, what really can we, from at least a probabilistic perspective on your side with these numbers? I mean, would you say? I mean, clearly the trend is decreasing, but then you in your story you do mention that they have been making some gains. How can you support that?
Okay, so if we look at the numbers. In 2009, I think the IFP had just over 4% of the national vote, and then, no, they had about 4.5%. And then they lost about 2%, and they went down to 2.5%. But most of those losses were the NFP's gains. The NFP came from nowhere, from 0 to 1.6. And the IFP lost 8 seats. They went, I think, from 18 in 2009 to just 10 in 10 in 2014. So the 8 they lost, the NFP picked up 6. Now, the NFP, even after its initial success in 2011, didn't maintain that kind of presence in municipal by-elections. The party actually lost a few to the IFP, and the IFP gained some ground. And especially since 2014, since those national provincial elections, the party's kind of been chasing its own tail. Magwaza Msibi herself had some serious health issues. I think she had a stroke, and she wasn't present in parliament, and she wasn't leading the party. And I think, ironically, the same issues that the IFP faced, that there was no succession plans or no young blood and exciting new ideas beyond, as Lukanya says, maybe narrow cultural or ethnic concerns, the party didn't really grow. The party, I think, contested one municipality in 2016. They didn't even pay their deposit in time to the IEC. And they've contested by-elections since then, but there hasn't been a presence. Now the party says that they're relaunching themselves. In a static world, if the NFP disappeared, you might assume that a lot of the ground that the NFP had won from the IFP might just go back to the IFP, especially since the ANC itself in KZN is maybe not as strong as it was in the Zuma years, and there is factionalism there. I want to just add one thing to what Lukanya said, which is very interesting. The parties I talked about, the smaller ones, were ones which were defined by identity issues, but not geographical identity issues. And of course, there are other examples of parties which are maybe closer in form and type to the IFP, like the United Christian Democratic Party, which appealed to mainly Tswana-speaking people in the Northwest. And that's declined. Or a party like the UDM, which traditionally its base has been in the Eastern Cape and it has appealed to Khoza speakers. And it and the UDM itself has declined in provincially and nationally. So, you know, there's small parties and there's small parties and there's identitarian and cultural issues and different points of contact, and some of them differ. So in that way, maybe the IFP isn't that different in type or form from the UCDP or the UDM, but it just started out bigger. And maybe it's still got a bigger base that exists.
Any comments there?
Yes, so Paul, I suppose, like, if I could ask a question, is there any prospect of this of these sort of parties reinventing themselves? I mean, for example, something like the UDM, I mean, its leader, General Olomisa, has been quite high profile in terms of broader issues. They've been in terms of the, you know, corruption and the PIC, and he's never really struck me as like as an ethnic based politician the same way Mangosuthu Buthelezi as he was.
Yes,
and the party's been around for like 20 years, but it somehow is seemingly not able to break out of that mold. What could you attribute to that? Because it's not like people in the Eastern Cape necessarily are voting on ethnic grounds, otherwise they would be voting for the ANC, I suppose.
Right. And that's a very good point, Lukanya, and I don't want to make too much and, you know, say that. I mean, as South Africans, we're smarter than just narrow issues. I think maybe it's, if you were someone from outside the Eastern Cape, for example, if you speak about the UDM, maybe the perception, and maybe I'm projecting, maybe these are my prejudices, is what does the party hold for me if I'm not from the Eastern Cape or I'm not part of a traditional base? So maybe these parties could do more, could have done more to branch out. And the point about General Holomisa is well taken. He's a parliamentarian. He's had presence. Someone like Themba Gordy, who heads up the African the APC. Sorry, my brain's not working. I forgot for a second what the letters stand for. But, you know, he is known not just for being the head of the APC, which at the moment, unfortunately, is a one-man show, but he was very instrumental, I think, in earlier years in SCOPA and in being a very important voice in the legislation. I don't know. Maybe it's... strategic voting on the part of South African voters, maybe it's pragmatism or fear or things like negative partisanship that people are attracted to slightly bigger parties because they think they'll give them more bang for buck for their vote. Maybe I think that the smaller parties that we mentioned, they do have a case to answer to that they should have done more to build the constituency and done constituency work in between elections and when they're not in parliament. I think the EFF has done that well. They've looked for a lot of opportunities to build the base outside of where they started, which is Limpopo and Gauteng.
So here's a sort of bringing back the data a little bit. So when you're talking about the constituency and you're wondering about the identity of the IFP and whether they do have some sort of something broader to add to the country, what can we know about the supporters of the IFP? I mean, what data do you have available, for example? Do we know, outside of the, we would know like where they are based on what you've produced here, we kind of may have a sense of their age, but do we know other sort of demographic type information in terms of employments or education levels or race groups or languages and so forth? I mean, we can surmise that as well as being the IFP, we know, but you know what I'm asking you, like what data do you have available really to determine the value of this constituency or where they are, how they could grow or how they could influence politics on a national level?
So I think as you said, we could infer a lot because we've got the census data and because the party support is so geographically concentrated. And again, an earlier point Lucanio made, there is some support in the south. In one or two of the municipalities, I think in the Ugu district, literally on the border with the Eastern Cape. But if you look at the map, it's just... it's chalk and cheese compared to that everything Newcastle and north. But you look at those areas are largely rural in terms of service delivery and infrastructure development and economic development, relatively underdeveloped compared to, I guess, the urban centers of Durban and Pietermaritzburg in eThekwini and in Umsunduzi. Some other stuff which is maybe a bit more educated guesswork, and we look at, let's say, other demographic and migratory patterns, the party support is more likely to be older in age than maybe the ANC support. That with increased urbanization from 94, with people moving from the villages to Durban and to Pietermaritzburg, maybe to Stanger, it was more likely to be younger people. And the ANC grew its support, especially in urban areas in KZN, while the IFP declined. So you're probably looking at what's left of a very loyal base, but much smaller, probably older than the voting average, socially more conservative, living in areas probably where economic development, opportunity, service delivery is a bit... it's probably stable, but not improving much compared to Durban. And, yeah, I think that's symptom and cause. That's part of the problem. If the party hasn't broken out of that mold, then, you know, demographically, you want to project where they're going. They're probably not going places. They're not going anywhere big.
I was caught about one point you mentioned there, Paul, about the average age of the voter being, like, a bit above the average. So demographics are not really in their favor on that point as well. And you also must assume this much more traditional kind of, like, a voter base as well, whereas, as we said before, people's attitudes are changing. People are probably, like, becoming, the younger generation is becoming less focused on issues of identity and ethnicity.
Yes.
So I'm trying to work out where does the future hold for this party? I mean, is it stuck where it is, or are we seeing, like, just declining further to the point where it becomes extinct?
I would say, if I gave a broad narrative, Lucanio, I would say like a slow and steady attrition. I think. Well, two things. There are two ways to interpret what's happened over what the last couple of election cycles we've spoken about. Either the party had found its base mostly and would lose support, but at a much slower rate from 2009, 2014 onwards, had the NFP not been there. Or the party will be extinct in two or three cycles in the next 10, 15 years. I think the party will continue longer than that, probably with reduced strength. But if you look at the potential, what's reasonable, if you took the whole area of the northern KZN, even and we're talking about places where the IFP has won more by-elections from the ANC and the IFP than it's lost over the last 5 years, so there is support. You're talking about a pool of votes in the second largest province in the country after Gauteng, where the potential, the absolute ceiling for the party is probably 25, 30 seats. Or let's say the whole area of northern KZN, for whoever wins it or however it's distributed, is probably 25, 30 seats out of 400 in the National Assembly. Now, that's a lot. It's less than the IFP had in 94. They'll probably never get there again. But from their current tally of 10... the best they could hope for on May the 8th, if they recovered their losses from the NFP, and maybe there was lower turnout for ANC voters in the province and it mirrored the country, maybe they go from 2.5 back up to 4, maybe 4.5. I think it's unlikely. I'd bet that the party could get between 3 and 4%. They'll improve on last time, if only because the NFP is in a mess. Oh, there we go. I made a prediction. I could be wrong.
No, that's one thing I really enjoy about using numbers and applying it to political issues, in the sense that, you know, what Lucanio just came up with, fall in our chat was it you can tell a better story with the numbers, and also it leads on to asking questions that you may not normally have asked. So you wouldn't have necessarily asked those questions about, oh, are we seeing the death of the IP, without looking at numbers and just attending, for example, the manifesto launch. You wouldn't necessarily have asked that question based on the turnout. So that's kind of the stuff we really want to chat about in the weeks coming, and in terms of how does data really change the way we look at the elections? What can we do around it? And also, I've got a question in terms of, I've got this thing of what kind of questions we can ask, and a lot of it is dependent on the data we've got available. So you look at the Ace Magashule issue, for example, that's coming in the news, and the sort of the rampant allegations of corruption. Can we determine, for example, within the Free State, or even, you know, within the ANC party itself, whether what this effect will have? Can we measure that by numbers, in the sense, is there some sort of electoral effect that we can see based on either how the Free State votes for the ANC, and can we at least draw a dotted line to ACE in those change of numbers? How do we determine that, or could we determine that?
I think there's a bit of evidence, Scott. So before we get to the election numbers, if we want to say, is there evidence in the numbers, in the data of how what's gone on under ACE, how that's affected economic and developmental and political risk outcomes in the Free State, we can. If we look at Auditor General's reports, if we look at internal Treasury reports about the financial risk profile of Free State municipalities, you can definitely see a decline of at least, especially in the last 5 years. If you look at the numbers, there are some hints. The one thing that stood out for me was in the 2016 elections, when the ANC lost Metsimaholo, which is a municipality just south of the Free State border. It's just on the banks of the Vaal River. So I learned that the clue is in the name. Metsimaholo is Sotho for big water, which is the Vaal. So there we go. There's a little bit of linguistic and geography in the mix as well. This is an educational show. And the ANC lost a majority, and it was the first municipality that the party had actually lost in the province. And there were a whole bunch of back and forths. There was the opposition coalition, which was the DA, the Freedom Front Plus, the Metsimaholo Community Association, and the EFF couldn't co-rate, and then the council collapsed, and there was a wholesale lot of by-elections in every single ward, and they redid the PL vote. In effect, the entire municipality went to the polls again. And what I found very interesting is that the South African Communist Party ran for the first time independently, not within the alliance. They won 3 seats, which, if you look at the numbers, they took directly off the ANC. And the deputy mayor in the municipality is now SACP. So, and ACE's base of operations, ACE's hometown, I think, if I'm not mistaken, is just to the west, is in the municipality of Ngwate, which contains the town of Parys. So that northern part of the Free State may have actually suffered fallout from ACE's maladministration and hurt the ANC at the polls.
Any comments from you?
No, it's interesting. How I suppose we can't really know, in terms of the numbers, we can't really poll the parties themselves. I can't know how far back I want to go. I think I must show my age. When I was a young reporter, the lady who was Stella Sitao, I went to the Transkei government, and she was caught up in this sort of corruption scandal. And people were saying, the NCC should get rid of her. And then people were like, oh, no, but you can't. No, you alienated your Xhosa voters. And me, as a young Xhosa speaking person from the Eastern Cape, I was like, which Xhosa voters? And then you sort of now you hear, can't act against these other people, Malusi or Watabile or whatever, because of this apparent base they have. Is anything in the numbers that actually supports any of this stuff, or is it just random?
That's a good question. You know, are these things, pronouncements being made by the elite, political elite, on behalf of the political elite? Does it speak to the rank and file? It's a good question. I don't know what the links are directly, but you'd know as well as I do, Lucanio, that when it comes to the party list, it's always a balancing act. You've got to have roughly equal numbers from each of the tripartite members. You've got to have members from the Women's League and the Youth League, and you've got to have a geographical mix. So insofar, I guess, maybe if I add the dots, tell me if I'm drawing the wrong picture. If the NEC or the decision-making bodies were to leave out too many people from one region, if it turned out that out of the 400, maybe only 10 or an unrepresentative number of parliamentarians came from the Free State, it might be that the provincial heads of the party would feel alienated. Maybe they wouldn't campaign for the party next time. Maybe there'd be factions. Maybe there'd be divisions. So my guess, and I guess it aligns to what you say, is that it's more about the people at the top making sure that they're inside the tent and don't feel like they want to break off and challenge power in any area within any constituency, rather than that's the will of the people. But that could be the case for any party in South Africa. We don't have open party lists. We don't, as the public, get to say who we want and don't want, which I think we should.
Mm-hmm. Great, guys. Well, let's leave it there. I just want to thank our guests, Paul and Lucanio, for coming in and doing this. You've been listening to another episode of The Numbers Don't Lie, multimedia live production, just as we integrate a little more data journalism into what we're doing here at TESOL Blackstar. There's a lot more coming in the coming weeks. I'd urge you to read the story that accompanies this podcast and have a look at the maps that show you a little more about the constituencies and where they are and how they are.
And they are interactive. Yeah. Anyone who reads them online can click and zoom in and find information on a particular ward.
Yeah, fantastic. That's a good point. Thanks for listening, everyone. I'm Scott Peter Smith, the head of multimedia here at TESOL Blackstar, and we'll talk next time.
You've been listening to Final Take, a multimedia live production from the TESOL Blackstock Group, publishers of the Sunday Times, Business Day, and Financial Mail.